Well, that was a great week. It's actually been months. We were doing this constantly, recording once a week, talking for about an hour, putting it on the internet, and I've decided to switch things up. Jeff is a real good friend of mine, and he's always going to be involved in some way, shape, or form, but, you know, making the guy drop everything and come out to my crib to record for an hour a week was getting tiresome. So instead, I had a homie from New Jersey, the famous Pace One of the Outsiders.
Yeah.
He came through, and we did some recording and stuff last night, and here we are. So considering the stature of this man and the journeys that he's on and going through, you know, it's worth a few Q&As here, and welcome back to the Brass Show.
Yeah.
That's what we do, as we do it, how we do it. Enjoying some crushable India Pale Ale on this beautiful April 10th, 2022.
And some E&J, the red top.
Cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Doesn't love this hip-hop shit.
Somebody crazy.
Yeah, I know, right?
Somebody in a mental institution.
Seriously. So, since you're in the middle of this illustrious career that you got going on for yourself, I gotta know.
Okay.
How did it start?
My rap career started, I started rapping when I was about 10 years old.
10?
10 years old, I wrote my first rap.
Okay.
At the time, Roxanne was out by UTFO.
Oh, yeah.
Just letting people know how ancient I am. And then in sixth grade, I wrote my second rap, and I performed it in front of my class. At the time, Lottie Dottie was out. I love Slick Rick.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, and it's been going ever since. And then got a little older. I was about 17. I met my homeboy Young Z.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? One night, walking down one of the back streets of Irvington, I saw one of my friends that I knew, well, a mutual acquaintance, a friend from a studio that I use over in Irvington, New Jersey, Augusta Street.
Okay.
His name is Madman, and he invited me over to Cypher with them. Went over there, and Young Z was in the Cypher, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, oh, we kicked a couple raps, and then when I was leaving, I was like, oh, homeboy was fresh.
Dope. Okay, so this is something that I'm glad that you're talking about, like, off the rip, because the internet is so full of shit. I found a, because, you know, it's like a legend, how, like, the Outsiders started, and there's, like, articles that exist that people probably go to and read that you and Z were beefing, and that's how it started.
We was we were in a cypher, more like, you know, battling, but not battling. Because, you know, I would rap, then he would rap.
Mm-hmm.
But not battling a cypher. It was other people in the cypher. And I just thought he was fresh. And then, you know, no beef or nothing.
Right.
And then I left. Later on in that year, maybe like a month or two went by, and I went to the studio in Irvington, and I saw Z. And, yo, we went back and forth again, did a little cypher with other people in the room. And, yo, at the end, he was like, yo, we need to do something. We need to make some records together.
Okay, yeah.
And that's how it started.
So it was friendship off the rip.
Yeah, friendship.
Okay, I see.
Admiration, more like, you know what I'm saying? Interest in what he was doing. I liked the way he sounded and the way he rapped. And he obviously liked the way I rap and how I sounded. And, yeah, we formed the Outsiders after that, and boom.
Yeah, all right, dope, because the thing about hip hop is the way things seem to spread among the populace. It's like that telephone game when you're a kid, you know, in the end, it's like, how did this morph into this thing? So when I started doing shows with you like 10 years ago or whatever, I had this idea in my head that, like, all right, Young Z and Pace One were like,
Rivals.
Right, or something was going on there. I didn't know if it was, you know, get off my turf or what.
No way.
It really seemed like that from what I read, like, forever ago.
Well, they might confuse what we said in the past as having beef.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we refer to it as battling. When you're in a cypher and you're trying to kick the freshest rap, you know, fresher than anybody in the cipher, you know, you say you're battling a little bit back then, you know what I'm saying? And maybe they confused the battling for beef.
Right. Okay.
It wasn't no beef though.
I wish I was battling in that era because it was straight freestyle, right? Just,
well,
that's it.
I don't freestyle off the top of my head. I barely ever do that. I always,
oh, no shit.
I always write my raps down and memorize it. And then when I go out, I kick them.
So you can like pull a 4-bar out from somewhere and just throw it in there.
You know what I'm saying? I just always write and I remember what I wrote. I memorize it. And then when I go out, I see how fresh it is. I test it out on people or in ciphers and stuff.
Yeah. Know? And then if you find a beat that fits it later,
we use that.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Cool. Interesting. So like there's that legend of like Biggie and Lil Wayne and Jay-Z, how they never write anything down. They just go to the studio. Do you think that they're like straight up off the head or do you think that's like a meditative?
Well, I don't want to call brothers lying or nothing, you know, or liars or nothing, but I know that in Notorious, you know, you see Biggie go to jail and he was writing in there and he had books of raps, you know what I'm saying? So it's no telling what he wrote down in those books that he remembers. And then when he gets a fresh beat, he just puts it to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, I don't know. It could be he just comes up with it and remembers it as he does it. I don't know. But I would say, when they go home, they have some time for themselves. They sit down, they write a little bit, and then they memorize it. And then, you know, they might change up a line or two.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When they go to record it. But
right.
I would say everybody writes. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, everybody's different. Elzai is apparently, like, all off the head, and then there it's there. But he's so intricate that it amazes me. And, like, I've been doing this work long enough. I mean, I started writing my first raps when I was around 15, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I look back at everything that I've done and I hear that, it's like, how is that
even possible?
You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure it is because people, you know, there's somebody who can run a mile in like, you know, 4 minutes somewhere, you know, that's not something I can do, but that doesn't mean somebody else can't, you know? So I always think of that. So you met Z on like a friendship tip, no beef. It was straight up like, yo, I like your raps.
Through a mutual friend.
Okay. And you guys had a battle, did a cipher.
Mm-hmm.
And then how did it grow from there? Like other people started coming in based off of it. Because I noticed that when I was a fan of yours, like years before I ever even met you, I always noticed that you and Z were like the central pieces to the outs. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah, so you guys, so essentially the way I saw it is like if it was a tree, you two are the roots, and then all the other MCs that came together for those landmark records seem to come from there. Is that accurate, or am I kind of off base? Or?
Well, we met some MCs as we went along.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Through the journey. And some MCs was there from the beginning. Like that night I met Z, my boy DU was with me.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And then Y'all Love is Z's brother.
Oh, I never knew that. Yeah, holy shit. Okay.
That's the same mother, same father. That's his blood.
Got
brother.
You. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So that's already four members. Mm-hmm. And then I was in high school. I went to high school with my partner Loon and my partner Slang Ton, RIP. You know what I mean? And then Z and DU met Rod Digger on the bus. They were going somewhere and they met Rod Digger. You know what I mean? And as we went out and out and about and through our journey, we met MCs. You know what I mean? That's how it is.
So just one day on the bus.
Met Rod Digger.
There's Dirty Harriet.
Young version.
Yeah, the young version.
The younger version.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she already had that style, right? Or did it?
She was always fresh.
Yeah.
She was always fresh and using multiple syllables and timing was good, all of that.
So she was like ahead of her time. Like, really, her style kind of set a landmark for a lot of MCs. I mean, it's not like a femc versus like a rapper's a rapper. She's a dope rapper regardless of her gender. I mean, her gender is a part of who she is, obviously, but it doesn't have anything to do with that. She was ahead of her time back when she was ripping in like when was that first record that she did with like Busta?
2000, maybe?
Yeah, 2000. That makes sense because I was in high school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she was always at the edge of being the best spitter, like even back then.
Always was fresh.
Yeah.
She started talking to Z, you know what I'm saying? They had, she got pregnant.
Okay.
and she did the Lyricist Lounge.
Yeah.
Ripped it. Hmm. Q-Tip was hosting, offered her a deal. She took the deal. You know what I'm saying? So she's always been dope. Always.
Always, huh? Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'm always curious about how these things like come together. And I know she's not here to speak on her own behalf. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Busta getting involved in her career, mm-hmm. that must have blew your mind when that first started happening,
it
right?
It did. It was about maybe 1995 or so.
That early?
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I didn't hear about her until like 97 or 98, though, I think.
It was early. It was early. And then she was with Q-Tip already.
Hmm.
And then Q-Tip and Busta negotiated over her contract, and she ended up going with Busta.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? But it was all peace with Q-Tip.
Q-Tip was really, it was peace, but he was really busy back then. You know, the Tribe Called Quest stuff.
I think he's probably really busy right now, bro.
He always.
He's digging in the crates as we speak looking for a
making
gem.
Making some old fresh ass mm-hmm. shit.
Yeah, so.
Always.
So, I've never been in that predicament, but it kind of seems like everybody you knew was blowing up in different ways simultaneously.
Yes, we were getting busy.
Yeah.
Young Z was the first to get a record deal. Mm-hmm. I think he got his record deal in maybe like 1993.
That early.
If I'm not mistaken. Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis signed him. Hmm. Fresh off of doing Janet Jackson, they were looking for a rapper, signed Young Z.
Yeah.
And then me, Rod Digger, and Young Z used to, you know, go to the studio and stuff. And then Diggy ended up getting with Busta. First with Q-Tip, then with Busta. That was early on, like 95 or so. Then we did the Fugees. You know what I mean?
How did that come together?
That came together. Young Z we met them. It was a studio back then. It was a studio in West Orange that belonged to one of the members of Kool & the Gang owned it. And we used to go through there, and the Fugees used to go there and record. They recorded their first stuff there, like the Booth Bath stuff and the vocab.
Yeah.
And we met them. And mm-hmm. I was always like, yo, we should work with them. You know what I'm saying? And then they had the Booger Basement on South Clinton.
The Booger Basement?
The Booger Basement.
Like picking your nose, Booger Basement?
Booger. Yep.
Okay.
Booger Basement. And then I used to record demos over there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Clef come out and freestyle with us and stuff. And then they took Young Z on tour with
them. Like Clef was just like around? Like how you would bump into somebody at the convenience store, kind of?
They were tour already, but they weren't as busy as they are now.
Yeah.
So, and it's his spot, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So he would come back, and then I was recording a demo, and then he came into the sound booth one time, and he was like, yo, after you finish, I want to get a cypher with you. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, cool. I went out there, he started rapping, I started rapping, Z started rapping, and he was like, yo, look, I'm doing a new record, I want you guys on it, you know what I'm saying? And he was still touring, he took Young Z on tour with him. When he came back, called us up, like, yo, it's time to do the record, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't even think they would have the impact that they had.
Right.
Because, you know, they had Nappy Heads at the time was out.
Okay.
And that was doing well, and I'm sure it went gold.
Yeah.
I was expecting gold from them.
Right.
They end up selling like 20 platinum.
One of the most landmark, incredible hip-hop albums of all time.
For real, two or three diamonds. So mm-hmm. So the impact was major. And then he even shot a video for it. We did Cowboys, and then we went up to Wild West City up in New Jersey. And it's like...
This is how the West was won.
Yeah. It's like Wild West City was like... a ranch that they put together for people, you know, tourists to come through and see how cowboys used to live. So
okay.
They shot it there.
Hmm.
And we made history, you know what I mean?
Who drove the theme? Like, did you walk in like, hey, this is what I was thinking? Or was it like something that like Z came up with or
Clef? Clef already had it in his mind.
Okay.
He knew exactly what he wanted to do.
I got to ask a couple of questions about what you know about this record.
Okay, wait. Let me finish the timeline.
Okay, I'm sorry.
In 96, we did the Fugees, the Cowboys. And mm-hmm. then 97, I got my deal on Rough House. So what you were saying about us all coming together, it took a few years, but we all did, you know, in some way, signed here, signed there.
Right.
And our career started.
Yeah. And you kept reaching out to each other and building and doing whatever you could to just make sure that the momentum kept going.
Well, me, Z, and Rod Digger, we always been tight.
Mm-hmm.
And we still tight to this day. You know what I'm saying?
Good to hear.
And, we just did it. And then we had friends like, you know, Fugees. Then we met Redman. And you know what I'm saying? And it's been going ever since. We've met Redman first, actually. But you know what I'm saying? He put me and Z on his records. You know what I'm saying?
What was that like? Was he, because he blew up, what, early. Like 92?
I was 91? 89.
In the 80s.
In the 80s. Because he was with EPMD.
So he was a star.
Already.
That's like me seeing Apathy. Like, that guy, to me, is like the biggest rapper.
Shout out to Apathy.
But
yeah.
He's like in this area. Mm-hmm. So like when you see him, it's like, whoa, you know? So when you saw Redman, it was like, whoa.
Super whoa.
You've got verses on Redman's work.
Yes,
so,
yes. I was on the Malpractice album, mm-hmm. and Young Z's on Doc's the Name.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And, yo, Red has always been a gracious dude to us and embraced us and supported us, and even to this day, he still does.
You know?
When I text him, he reaches back out to me. He's always been a great dude to us.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Cool.
One of my good, good friends in hip-hop.
What I was going to ask about the Fugees, though.
Mm-hmm.
Lauryn Hill is
impeccable.
Not only impeccable as an MC, mm-hmm. an amazing singer, like just as an artist. Mm-hmm. Like if you really want to get all intellectual about it, mm-hmm. she's amazing. The kind of artist that gives me goosebumps when it's 90 degrees outside when I hear her do her thing.
Yes, yes, yes.
What I want to know from what you experienced being around them is how much of it is Wyclef? And how much of it is Lauryn? What, or is it like
Fugees?
Just...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a collaborative effort.
Well, I know that, but like... And I know Praz... People are going to hate me for this. Praz, to me, is kind of more like the business-minded guy who kind of put it together that way. And I know that he's an active artist, and I'm not knocking him. Mm-hmm. But when you compare him to Wyclef and Lauryn...
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he's still a good artist.
No, I know he is. I'm not
a superstar with
Maya,
right. Dirty Bastard.
Yeah.
Yo, he's pretty good.
No, I know he is, but yeah. I'm just saying in comparison lyrically to those two, it's like...
Well, it's hard to keep up with Lauryn, first of all.
Right, that's what I was getting at.
It's hard for dudes, for girls, for anybody to keep up with Lauryn Hill. She's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wyclef is just, he's a natural. When I think of Clef, he's a natural. He plays the guitar. He go out there and sing. He'll go out there and rap. He goes out into the crowd.
He raps Barry Manilow.
He engages the crowd, and he's very versatile, and he's impeccable artist.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy to even, had any dealings with them is a blessing.
Right. You know what I'm saying? I can imagine, man.
They're very...
But when you met them, see, I'm looking at them through the lens of superstar, already platinum, mm-hmm. like amazing artists mm-hmm. that have like touched the hearts and minds of millions of people already.
Yes.
You knew them when it was just like 5,000 fans and in a hope and a dream, essentially. So, I mean, what I'm trying to get at from this line of questioning is like when Lauryn was in the studio, mm-hmm. like, from what you perceived of the situation, how much was she driving, the creation versus, like, what Wyclef was doing? Or was it, like, just a perfect balance of both?
When they was doing the Fugees album, I would say Clef was doing a lot of the driving because he was doing a lot of the producing.
Okay.
You would see him at the MPC punching in stuff, and he'd be like, yo, we using this sample. And
How many mics do we rip Woo! On the daily?
Many money.
Say me some many, 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 many.
Yo, incredible money. Artist. Very, very gifted and talented and gracious, too. They spread their arms and welcomed us in. They gave us open arms, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, and then him kind of making a leap later to, like, building up with Shakira and stuff. I mean, he's...
And Beyonce.
He's done his work. Yep. Yeah, and Beyonce?
Beyonce and Destiny's Child, yes.
Yeah.
That no. You say yeah. That shit is fire, bro. I'm sorry. You could get good records out of Clef to this day.
Yeah.
And he did Maria. And, yo, he's incredible, man. The dude is incredible.
I had a Oh God, who sings the song? I'm not really a country guy, man, and you might not know this either, but who sings that you got to know when to hold?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's Kenny Rogers.
Yeah, right? he collaborated on an album that he did with Kenny Rogers, and he used the Pharoah Monch, like, get the fuck up. And he like mashed it together. So it was like, you got to know when to hold them. Get the fuck up. Clef said, get the fuck up. Uh-huh. It's like one of the most unique and amazing collaborations.
On the Cowboys joint, yep. Pa says, you got to know when to hold them.
Yep.
Yo, man, they're not biased or, you know, just towards R&B and hip-hop. They're, like, really broad-minded musicians.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
They
do their thing, man. I love them.
Yeah. Dope. So let's get back to Redman, because you know, I know I've told you, Redman to me is the MC.
Yes.
If my personal top five, Redman,
mm-hmm.
Redman. No, I'm not going to do all that, but like he's up there. You know what I mean?
Yes, definitely. So
how did you come across, like I said, you know, like he's just a guy that's like around. He's got this clout. You know who he is. He's established himself. You said 89 when he got his first deal and started. 89,
he was with EPMD.
Right.
On their albums. And then, he just built up the momentum, got the deal, and then he did Blow Your Mind.
Right.
His own single.
So
Blow Your Mind might have took like till maybe 92 to come out, but he was already out. Running around with Biz Markie,
right.
And EPMD. You would hear him on Stretch and Bobbito's show.
So Eric Sermon met you first and introduced you to Redman? Like, how did it happen?
No way. Red introduced me to Eric Sermon.
Okay.
But Young Z introduced me to Redman.
Okay.
You know what I'm all saying? Because right. Young Z, his DJ, knew Redman's sister. And then Redman's sister invited us over to meet Redman. And we met Redman. So through Redman's sister, Roz Noble,
mm-hmm.
and through Young Z's DJ Mud, we met Redman, you know what I mean?
So it was like right, essentially, the family. Like, hey, how's it going? You're welcome.
Yo.
You know.
When I met him, I was just like, oh, shit. Because at the time, he already had his album out.
Mm.
I met him in like 92 or 93. So he already had his album out, and he even had on There Is a Dark Side was out.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And he was really hot as fish grease, bro. Hot on MTV all the time.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
You know, MTV Raps was still coming on. He'd mm-hmm. be on there all the time. And, yo, she invited us over to 20th Street, and he was out there, and I was like, oh, shit, it's Redman. And, yo, I went up to him, and, he gave me some big dap. Psh, slapped me on the back, was like, what's up? I've been hearing y'all demo tapes, y'all fresh. And I was like, oh, shit, Redman thinks
that would
fresh.
Blow my mind to
yo,
hear
it blew Redman my mind.
Say anything positive about anything I had to do.
Because, you know, you would think, like, you know, you get a little big-headed when you get that much fame and, you know,
not him.
Steam underneath you. Not him.
No, you can see it in him, especially when, like, I've been a fan of his for, like, 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen every interview. Mm-hmm. I watch him all the time. Mm-hmm. Him talking about Vlad. Him talking about consistency and how, you know, your income determines your outcome. I'm not talking about your money, but like what you put into it, you get out, you know?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, he's just...
He's always been a great dude, cool dude. And, yo, you can see his journey is continuing, too.
Yeah. Because
now he's out, he's on social media talking to his fans and to the public. Telling people to be positive, you know, just because this happens today don't mean it's going to happen tomorrow.
Hey, if you got your mission and you know what it is and you keep it in your sights, you can achieve it, you know.
Yes,
so
yes. He been parachuting. You ain't see him jump out the plane?
No.
Yeah, he could do it by himself. No harness to anybody. He did it himself. Yes, him and a couple other guys. They went up about 15,000 feet or so, jumped out.
Look, I'm all about chasing my dreams, but if I got to jump out of an airplane with a parachute, it's, you know,
oof.
Can't do it.
I looked at it. I was like, I don't know if I would do that. And then I was like, congratulations, Doc, because you have to overcome your fear to do that.
Right.
And you have to do a lot of training and, mm-hmm. You know, you got to have control of your fear, and you could definitely see it in him that he's controlled his fear. He's conquered that fear of heights or whatever.
He's the master of his own reality or whatever.
Yes, definitely. And he's been that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He was always tough, and you know what I'm saying? If you act bad to him, he'll try to, like, shake it off, but if you go too far in, he's going to fight you. You know what I'm saying?
He reciprocates whatever energy you get him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah. Yeah, if you keep a peace, he keeps a peace. You try to start a war, you don't want to do
that. I never been there when he had personal beef, but you know what I'm saying? I heard about the stories.
I heard MC Hammer tried to give him some business.
MC, we respect Hammer, you know what I mean?
I think you have to, right?
Right, because, yo, first of all, he's from Oakland, and Oakland ain't no joke. It ain't known for giving out no punks or nothing like that, you know what I'm saying?
This corner, that corner, everywhere. That's a too short line, but... Yeah, I always think of Oakland as like Too Short's neighborhood.
E-40, Too Short, Hammer. A lot of people come from Oakland, you know, that whole hyphy.
I've never been there.
I've been there for a few times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it peace?
It's wonderful.
Okay.
Great, great. A lot of black people, you know what I mean? Some white people too.
Okay. It's like going to Hartford.
Right.
Or Jersey. yeah, so how did it come together where you got a verse on Malpractice? Because you got extra bars. Like, you got more than 16 on there.
Yeah, I did.
Usually, I mean, the way I collaborate with people is it's kind of like a given, like, all right, you're going to drop 16 bars here, but you just keep going for a mm-hmm. little bit there. How did this all come together like that?
For one thing, I got more than 16 bars because Redman took his verse off so I could be on there.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so he had a 20-bar verse in there, and he was like, yo, I spit 20 bars. Go fill it in for
Imagine Redman taking off a verse.
So
somebody else. What?
Yo, he's a great guy. I told you, man. And that's my boy. That's my boy. But, big bro.
So he just reached out to you like, Pace, I need you on this record? Or what? How did it?
He did call me, but beforehand, I used to call Red all the time. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We had already done a couple records together. Young Z had a record deal with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Okay.
Red Man produced the joint, came in, rapped on it. Mm-hmm. And then I got to rap on it. Z got to rap on it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And that was the first time we collaborated. And then after that, the Outsiders had our deal on Rough House Columbia, you know, Columbia and Sony Music. So we called in Redman and Method Man. You know what I'm saying?
Meth too, huh?
Yeah, Meth too. You know, Meth is tough, but I love Meth. So they came in, they collaborated with us. And then after that, he was doing his album. I still used to call him all the time. He just came off the Blackout tour. He took me on tour with him. And I was like, yo, Red, I know you're doing your album. Don't drop your album without letting me get on it. And he said, okay.
Okay, cool.
And then one day he called me.
So
like,
you just straight up had open communication with him.
Since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Since I met him, he gave me his number. Yo, I always call Red, man. When I was a kid, yo, I met him at 19. Mm-hmm. Yo, I used to call him every day, bro. We didn't even have a phone. Like, our phone got cut off. I used to go to the corner and use the pay phone.
Yeah.
And page him and call him, like, all the time, bro. You know what I mean? And then, yo, he loved me. One time he did Rap City. He was considering starting a new group, and he was like, yo, I'm putting my man Pace One in it. I'm putting my sister Roz Noble in it. Mm. And I always got shouted out on Rap City. I was like, holy shit. Like, Redman is my boy.
That's man. That's awesome.
That's my boy, boy.
I opened up for Method Man once years ago, and I got about 2 minutes to talk to Method Man, and he thanked me, but he didn't have to thank me because I sold, like, I don't know, 80 tickets on his behalf.
Yeah.
But it was like selling, like, people just wanted to buy. You know what I mean? It's not hard to sell something if people want to buy it.
Selling candy.
Yeah, this was
to kids.
This was in 2006. And I sold a bunch of tickets, and the only thing I really got to say to him was like, yo, I sold a bunch of tickets for the show. And he was like, oh, thank you so much. But he was like a real dude, real respectful. Like I said, 2 minute conversation, it was over. Then he hopped on the tour bus with the hot girls that showed up. Not trying to blow up a spot, but that's what happened. And it was amazing. So I mean, it's good to find out. Sean Price, you know, there's information out there of him. Like, I don't even want to meet my favorite rapper because that guy might be an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I've been lucky. I've met you. Mm-hmm. You and me met like 12 my years boy, ago, 13, know, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Started doing shows, kept going. You're awesome. Thanks. That Method Man, he's awesome.
Uh-huh.
It's good to hear that Red Man's the shit too, you know?
He
it's
is, just, man.
Yeah.
Yo, man, we lucky hip hoppers, man.
Yeah.
To be able to meet those guys. Because when I was a kid, I didn't get to meet, like, I never met Rakim. I'm a fan of Rakim, but I did get to meet KRS-One.
Okay.
I got to meet,
what was that like?
Oh, like, yo, almost passed out, bro.
I've
almost
seen him perform, fainted. And it was one of the best performances
I'm
I've
sure
ever seen.
I peed a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Yo, because that's my man. Like, you know, back then, he was, like, the number one rapper, like, and holding that spot for years and years and years, so... It was really good to meet him, and Young Z had that deal, and he didn't even tell me who was going to be at the studio. He was like, come with me today to the studio. When you see who's producing my new joint, you ain't going to believe it.
When I was a young hip-hop fan, one of the first records that actually really connected with my soul, like in a way that I can't describe, and it's weird to say it like that, I guess, but... Step into a world...
Clack, clack!
Dude, that joint. And when I was young, I didn't really understand that there was a problem of over commercialization in hip hop. To me, it was just hip hop. You know, I wasn't thinking deeply about any of these matters, but
I don't consider that a commercial joint either.
No, I don't at all. But the thing is that KRS-One stomped out Nelly. Like when Nelly was doing his thing and wearing the little band-aid on his face, yeah. And you know, the get me to pair, like the fucking like buying shit and just, you know, it's marginally entertaining.
So why but, I could get the stomping in my Air Force Ones.
But
Nelly, my boy too. He used to come through.
Well, he's not, I'm not shitting on him. But what I'm saying is that KRS-One is the type of artist that like legitimately opens up your mind and you actually consider things versus just being like, I'm just, you know, playing something with a lot of bass to bump out of the trunk as I whip it down 95 or whatever, you know?
Well, you know how that goes. That's needed too. We need the bumping joints, but KRS make the bumping joints and he's the teacher. He always like gives you something to educate you, I would say.
I would do anything to have one of these kinds of conversations with that man.
Yo, you got to reach out to him. Yeah. He's a good guy.
I know he is.
He goes through a lot of places. He lectures at colleges and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he'll come through and talk to you.
There was an MC out of Hartford that I loved as a brother and respected tremendously. Because you remember Sully's. That was my spot.
Mm-hmm.
Sully's was my spot for about 10 years before it shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Learned to grip the mic there, learned to trade fours with people, learned how to rock an audience, found my voice, and Lump Sum, the ominous one who passed away in 2012, was very instrumental in that, and he said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I straight up can talk to KRS-One. If you ever get to that level, don't be afraid to do it, because that man will make your soul grow. That's what he said. He was like, you will learn things by talking to him.
Yes.
He won't come at him as a fan, come at him as an artist, come at him as your best self. You're going to get something tremendous out of it just by having a conversation. It sounds like that's what you got from it, right?
Yes, yes, yes. He shines the light. He gives you history, you know, as he lived it. It's not like word of mouth or anything. He actually lived it. You know what I'm saying? And he'll tell you about people like Africa Islam, the DJ, and
I got one question. Who am I?
Right?
The MC.
That's my man. And he'll tell you about Afrika Bambaataa and all of the jams that used to go on in the parks. You know what I'm saying? I was really little, but my dad took me to a couple, but I was really little, so I don't know what KRS knows, you know what I'm saying? Even though I got to live through some of them, KRS will give you the rundown, the history. And yo, you learn from it and you listen to him. And he'll talk about life and things in general as well.
I love this culture so deeply down to the roots of the situation. But there's always something that I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Always.
Like, there's always, like...
All of us.
I had no idea that Slick Rick wasn't born in the United States.
You thought that accent was fake?
I don't know. He's wearing an eye patch. I didn't think that was real either.
You thought he was from New England or something.
Well, I just thought he was...
They got a little bit of an accent.
Yeah,
up there.
I thought he was doing, like, you know, character or whatever. But, mm-hmm. you know, you peel back the layers of the onion, you learn more and more and more. And...
But he grew up in the Bronx.
Right.
When I was a kid, he was already up in the Bronx making noise.
But that was the thing. That's why I was, like, surprised, uh-huh. you know, because it's like, in my head, he's from the Bronx, but... It is what it is.
That's right. That's right. Yo, all of those guys, Slick Rick, Dana Dane, mm-hmm. Dougie Fresh, Chill Will and Barry B. A lot of those guys from up there, they're great MCs and entertainers, and you learn a lot from them. I got the pleasure of meeting Slick Rick before. I did a couple shows with him on the Lyricist Lounge tour.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah. He was the headliner. We open up for him sometimes.
Something about you. That's, I'm glad I know you because I constantly have this thought in my head.
Same here.
I have this thought in my head that it's like, you're one of those few people who are so entrenched in this culture that no matter how long I talk to you, I know we're going to get to some story where it's like, can't really tell you that. Because it's you and maybe like two other human beings on the entire face of the planet
that
know
it.
About that experience yes. that affected everybody in this culture.
Yes.
You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
So it's...
My 6 degrees of separation is crazy.
Yeah, right. Bro.
Crazy. I'm lucky enough to have met a lot of the guys that do it. But I go out to the shows. I perform at the shows. I'm a part of the culture. Like I actually devoted... a large portion of my life to it, you know what I'm saying? And it's rewarded me, too.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Not in vain.
So when you, because you've been everywhere, you've traveled, I mean, you told me the story about how you were present when Michael Jackson held the baby out the window.
Wow. I was there. I was on tour with a group called More Chiba, mm-hmm. me and DJ Muhammad.
Yeah.
We were going, you know, doing the tour, we got to go everywhere, Italy, Portugal, all around Europe.
That's crazy.
And then we go to this venue. It was in Berlin, Germany.
Mm. Okay.
So we're staying at this hotel. When we get to the hotel, it's packed. So I'm like, oh, shit, they know who More Chiba is here. Like, everybody came to see him. So,
it was king of pop.
But when we walked in, they didn't react because I was with More Chiba. And they wasn't running up to him like, oh, we're here to see you.
Right.
So I was like, yo, it's stupid packed here. Mm. So I went to a lady and I was like, hi, you speak English? What's going on? She was like, Michael Jackson is upstairs. I was like,
shit.
Get the fuck out of here.
That's wild.
Look, then... I go to reception to get my room. She was like, you got your ID? I give her my ID. I give her my ASCAP card. She looks at it like, oh, okay, here you go. Yo, I'm staying on the same floor with Michael Jackson, bro.
Crazy.
I'm outside. Now,
on somebody else's dime,
now
too, right?
I'm super fan. I'm outside my room like, I got to see this motherfucker right here. But he never came out the room. But I start hearing people outside. Like cheering, like, So I go outside, I look up, Michael Jackson got his baby out the window. I'm like, holy
what are you doing?
Shit, yo,
why
oh
did
my
he do
God.
I still don't understand why anybody would do that.
He coming out the curtain, he just saying hi to people, he put his baby out there, they like, they think he gonna drop him, but he was just showing
them. Showing them, like, you know.
Yo, man.
The Lion King or whatever.
I don't know how lucky is, but I was there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
What I was getting at, though, with that before we got to Michael Jackson is because you've been everywhere, and, you know, my cities are like New Haven, Hartford. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I go up to, like, Vermont, and, you know, I know yeah. the tri-state cities, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like hip-hop's got a different feeling from New Haven to Springfield. And then Hartford's in between. Hartford's in between. Hip-hop feels different there, too.
Uh-huh.
So because you're a global artist and you've been everywhere, uh-huh. like you start getting like a vibe everywhere you go, right? Like, mm-hmm. all right, Detroit hip hop is like this. Mm-hmm. And like case in point, you met one of the biggest artists on the planet.
Not only did I meet him, I recruited him
yeah.
into my team. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Okay, let me give you a quick rundown. He's talking about Eminem, y'all.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you how I met Eminem. So one time I was with Z and we went to D.C. to do a show.
Mm-hmm.
Down in D.C., well, me and Z was out there rapping. A guy walks up on us like, yo, I want to rap with y'all. I want to get in y'all cypher. And, yo, it's bizarre. So Bizarre Kick a Rap, he rapping for us. We like, ah, you kind of fresh. You know what I'm saying? So we keep in touch with him. He comes to Newark to see us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He chills out. He goes back to Detroit. Then at the time, De La Soul was out.
Okay.
De La Soul had a song called It's So Easy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it's playing all on the radio and stuff. So we go, me and Z go to the video shoot. Then at the video shoot, Z's manager comes over to him. He like, yo, Bizarre wants to fly you out to Detroit.
Mm.
But Z like, yo, I got sessions to do. I'm on the tour with the Fugees. I can't do that right now.
Okay.
And Z looked at me like, Pace, you want to go? And I was like, yeah, I'll go out there and chill with Bizarre and do some songs and stuff.
No
I'll demo them up, you know what
Being
I mean?
Young and free, like time
so,
to go.
So boom, I flew out to Detroit. Next thing you know, a little white kid with his hat pulled over his eyes comes to pick us up, Bizarre and the white kid, and he's like, hi, I'm Marshall.
Oh, so he was driving and he was just scooping you,
yeah.
Basically.
He bought Bizarre to pick me up. And he had his hat over his eye. Hi, I'm
now,
Marshall.
This is back in the day where not too many Caucasian dudes were ripping it at all. So were you surprised?
No Caucasian. Maybe Milkbone.
Yeah.
Milkbone.
Who you also know. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And Milkbone was on the Shady Core album. Yeah. Shout out Milkbone. But we went out there and then boom, it wasn't any white guys. It wasn't even cool for white guys to rap. At the time,
we would get clowned.
The white guy from 90210 was rapping.
Yeah.
So it wasn't helping the reputation of the white man in hip hop. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
like a real spitter, like an Aaron Carter kind of.
So we jump in Eminem's car. He plays me his demo tape. No, not even a demo tape. He had Infinite. That album, he played it for me.
You heard of hell while I was sent from it.
And then he did, what you know about the 313? So I was like, yo, that's kind of fresh. You know what I'm saying? He was like, Pace, what you think of it? I was like, that's kind of fresh. You know what I'm saying? It's not bad. And he was like, not bad. So I give him my tape. And he like, holy shit, this is what I'm really trying to get at is sounding more like what you have. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, that's nothing. When we go to the studio, put on the beat, me and you rip to it. You know what I'm saying? We'll do something nice. So, boom, we go to the studio. We make a song called Take the World With Me.
Mm.
And then I do a couple more songs.
That was the first joint you ever did with him, is that?
Yes. Take the World With Me. And then we do a song. I did a couple songs with Bizarre. I get the tape, and I'm about to come home. Eminem says, yo, Pace, me and Bizarre want to be outsiders. Can we be outsiders? Can we be in the group? And I was like, you could be the Detroit version of the outsiders. He was like, no, I want to be in the outsiders with you, Z, Rod Digger, Slang Ton. I want to be a part of that. So I was like, well, I'm only one person. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you could be in it. I'm going to tell him when I go home, I'm going to talk to Z about it and make you official. You know what I'm saying? So I come home. I do this on purpose. I take the tape. They pick me up from the airport. I take the tape. I put it straight in. Take the World With Me comes on.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, I let it play out. And then I stop it.
It blew Z's mind, right?
Z was like, yo, that kid rapping with you is pretty dope. What, like, yeah. Yo. And I was like, guess what? He's white.
Okay.
And Z was like, he's white? Mm-hmm. He was like, play it again. I played it again. He was like, that kid's white? That one right there? And I was like, yo, because I didn't tell him I did the song with a white kid. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see what they were going to say.
Right.
So he was like, that's a white kid? He was like, oh, he could definitely be down with us because it ain't no white kids rapping like that. Mm. And if he could rap like that, yo, we doing it. And then, yo.
There's a YouTube video of you guys performing together where M came out to Jersey and the place is going insane.
Many of them. Many of them. If you look through there, it's ones when he blew up with him, even before he blew up.
Mm-hmm.
We did the Wetlands in New York. We did Tramps.
Wetlands.
Yeah. As soon as you come out the Holland Tunnel.
Okay.
It's right there.
Boom. Oh, all right.
It's not there. It's there, but it's not the Wetlands anymore.
Right, okay.
But as soon as you come out the Holland Tunnel, smack, it was right there.
Yeah, it was on the tip of my memory because I think I was too young to go there when it was like at its...
Jumping,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. But... Yeah, man. So, I mean, amazing.
Amazing, yeah. Bro. And, you know, I thank God every day that I got to go on the journey I'm on, you know what I'm saying, and do the stuff I do, you know what I'm saying, and know the people and had met the people that I've met. It's a blessing.
Yeah. Must be so crazy to look back on everything that you've done and continue to do. So, I mean, that's M. How'd you meet Mr. Green? How did that come together?
Oh, wow. Shout out Mr. Green, one of the illest producers ever.
I agree.
I met him through a mutual friend. We got a friend called Kosher Deals. You know the guy that does stuff with Fat Joe?
Yes.
He was outside the club, yep. And then he was like, yo, Fat Joe. He'd be freestyling about stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he like, Fat Joe just walked up. This shit is incredible.
Yeah.
But yo, Fat Joe, you know, pulled him. Got him under his wing a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Hmm. Let him on stage at one of his shows and stuff. But
this is Mr. Green you're talking
no,
about?
No, Kosher Deals.
Oh, Kosher Deals. All
okay,
right.
So Kosher Deals. I met Kosher Deals. Kosher Deals wanted to do a song with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do collabs with all the underground MCs.
Right.
You know, if any MC that's coming up, they want to do something and they got a couple dollars and a beat, I'll do it with them.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So he hit me on my MySpace. I said, come through, let's rap a little bit. Let me see what you about. He came through Chancellor Avenue and Rutgers Street, you know, in Irvington. And that's a big thing because I don't bring, Irvington is black.
Yeah.
I don't bring a lot of white people around.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? So, and Kosher Deals is white. So he came to the block. He was like, yo, what's up? And you know what I'm saying? I got this beat from my boy, Mr. Green.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yo, so we did it. And then when Green heard it, Green was like, yo, I want to work with Pace too.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? He reached out to me online. This is MySpace days.
Okay.
He DM'd me online. I told him come through as well.
Guys just started building off the strength.
He came through. And then he played some beats. And I was like, oh, shit, some of these is like real jewels. Because the first one we did is a jewel.
You was he I mean? Always a machine, like a Native Instruments machina producer? Because I swear I heard of him. I'm thinking the first year I heard of him was like 07. But I know because I'm like a gearhead when it comes to like audio production, mm-hmm. that the first machina dropped in 09. And it was a game changer for a lot of dudes because, you know, MPCs off the rip, like, I mean, your most standard model is like $700. And the entry point for Native Instruments machine getting in when it like first dropped, I think was like $300. Mm-hmm. So like a whole bunch of people who, you know, had computers and could sync up, you know, oh, well, I got the expensive part. I got a computer, which is like, whatever. I can hook this controller up to it. And this thing controls software on the computer. That was like new landmark shit.
Yes.
But every time I talked to Green or worked with Green in any capacity, it was machina. But I didn't really start talking to him until like, I met him before you, like a year or two before you, through Blackistan.
Yes.
And yeah, he was a machine guy. But I mean, if you were working with him during the MySpace days, what was he doing?
He if I'm not mistaken, he was using like Fruity Loops.
Okay.
You know, that was a program online.
Yeah, yeah.
You could load your sample in it. Okay. They had drum kits for you to pick from, or you could just sample drums from the record. You know what I'm saying? And he was using it, and he knew how to use it.
Right. That's really what it comes down to.
A lot of people, when they make those little computer beats, you could tell it's a computer beat. With like, ding, 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 ding. But, yo, Green was soulful with his shit. You hear the only color that matters is green.
Green, yep.
Right? You've heard that,
right? Oh, yeah, of course.
You know what I'm saying? And
that's the era that I met you at. You dropped that about 3 months before I met you.
That is deep stuff. Some of those beats are incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Like, hip-hop is on there.
Children Sing?
Children Sing is on there. And, yo, it's a lot of incredible stuff on there. And I was like, oh, shit, this kid really knows how to work this program.
Right.
It's sounding like an MP. But it's not an MP, it's the Fruity Loops.
No shit.
And yo.
This guy's been around, you know?
He could work any machine, but yo, I know he started on the Fruity Loops when he, I don't know if he started on Fruity Loops, but he was using the Fruity Loops when he met me and he produced our albums.
You know what I started on?
What?
You ever, do you remember the really shitty program called Acid Pro?
Acid Pro.
It was for making techno music, supposedly, but you would just drop clips in and chop it. You'd just do it all with the mouse, like neat, neat, click, 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 click. Yep. Making it happen that way. But it worked, you know. I'd take a snare, drop it in there, you know. Those beats sucked. I didn't get good at making beats until like I think like maybe 3 or 4 years ago. But Yeah, always trying.
You got it down now.
Yeah. Oh, man. So good now. I cannot wait until this track we did goes out, man.
A couple of them.
Yeah.
And I make beats as well. I made the next song I made with Eminem is Makossa.
Mama say, mama sa, mama makossa.
Yo, and mama yeah. say, mama sa, mama
dude, that was a banger.
So I made that beat. You know what I'm saying?
Made that beat?
I made that on the MPC. Boom, boom.
Blunt split is all that.
Right? Yeah. And yo, we did that, man. And yo, what producer has Eminem on one of their joints? And I was lucky enough to have Eminem on that joint. You know what I mean? So, yeah, but I learned on the SP-12.
If you sing like Brownlow.
Brownstone.
Brownstone.
You couldn't take the crown home. Try to call me out and get the dial tone.
Pace wanna.
Yeah. All right, so back in the day, I was in a group. Mm-hmm. I was in a group called Real Characters.
Okay.
And my partner's name was Best, right?
It was just a duo?
Just me and him.
Okay.
Best. We were a part of the Outsiders, but then I joined that group.
Okay.
The Real Characters. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because he was a producer.
Right.
So I used to go over his house, and yo, one day I was over his house. He was like, Pace, come here. Check this SP out. Ding, 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 ding. He was like, hit something on it. I was like, I was like,
this was an SP-12?
Yeah, SP-1200.
Okay.
Back then, you know, boom, and you...
My album...
The beats.
My first album, Mindflex, that's all in every beat on there is an SP-12, pretty much.
It's an incredible machine.
I didn't, you know, shout outs to the producer that worked on that, Columbion, but that was really my first, like, oh, SP-12? Yeah. And a lot of those beats came out of like 2008, 2009. So in the minds of a lot of people, it was dinosaur equipment back then. But Blackistan used to talk about how like there's just something magical about that machine.
Yo, it is. Most of the hip hop that came out back then came from the SP-1200 hooked up to the S950.
Okay.
The Akai S950. Before the MPC came out, they had the S950. And it's a wall, it's a rack, you know, module. You slide it in a rack.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And it has the buttons in the front. Ding, 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 and that's how you sample.
Okay.
And then your drums came from boom, 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 the SP-1200.
Yeah.
Yo, half of the hip-hop songs we know came from those two devices being hooked together in a studio. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it cost a grip, too, right?
Yeah, it did. Back then, like, $1,000 was expensive. $1,400 was expensive back in the 80s. That shit is like $2,000, $2,800 for us now. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, so I learned on the 1200, and, yo, he showed me how to do it. And then Z, after he got some money from the Fugees for helping him write it and performing, we all got some money, but he took his money and he bought a studio.
Okay.
He bought the studio equipment. He bought an MPC. He bought an ADAT. Back then we was using the ADAT digital recorder.
Going through the digital revolution must have been like mind-blowing, right? Like when computers just started doing what they do now.
I was so happy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I was so hot because, you know, every session you have, you got to take your reel-to-reel.
Yeah.
Or it was a VCR tape that goes in the ADAT. And you got to carry
a VCR tape?
A VCR tape. In the first ADAT, it was like a VCR tape. I don't know if it's exactly a VCR tape, but it was one of those big tapes, big block tape.
Okay.
And then you had the reel-to-reel. The reel-to-reel is heavy as hell to carry around. And if you got two to six songs to do, you got to carry two of them. And they are heavy. So when Pro Tools rolled out, I was like, thank you, God.
Game changer.
Total game changer.
Yeah.
Because now I got it at the crib. It's not even expensive. You pay for a subscription, $25 a month. You got Pro Tools, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I came in during the FireWire era.
Oh, shucks.
That's when I started, you know, I would go places to record and pay people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd watch them do their magic, but it was all Mac computers and stuff. You know, I really started hitting studios like 2003, 2004. Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole brash thing started for me because I played drums, I played guitar, I play instruments, but like every project, my team would be like, yeah, we're going to do it. golly, guys, we're going to go. And then like a month later, it'd be like, no, nah, I got to hang out with my girlfriend or whatever stupid shit. And it's I want a career. Can we fucking go? Please?
Girlfriends have killed many careers. I'm sure as a kid out there was like, damn, I almost had it, but my girl started riffing.
I would have done way more with my music by now if I had not married that woman.
Oh,
you know?
Gosh. But you got two beautiful kids.
I did. And I mean, I'm not dissatisfied with my life. It's just, it is what it is. But now I am going to just be doing my thing, bro. I'm going to build. I'm not going to announce it here exactly what I'm doing, but I'm making moves. That's and right. my That's life right. is exciting as shit.
That's right.
And fucking, I mean, my life has got a good trajectory to it. I used to be a fan of you. You used to be a dude I read about in magazines. I'd see you on TV. You were with all the stars that I looked up to. And now we're sitting here hanging out at my house doing, dude, this is the dream fucking came true in my head. You know, I mean, I'm not like a multi-million platinum selling guy or anything, but like just the fact that I get to wake up and actually do this shit, the fact that it's real, like, monetary rewards, all that, it's all bullshit.
It's coming.
But I mean, who knows? But the fact that I get to just do hip hop, be hip hop, and live this life, that's enough for me, bro. You know what I mean? You always got to hit your limit and then find out where your limit is and then go for more. But you know, it's a real thing. It's not. You know, it's not just a pipe dream.
Then break that limit.
Yeah, exactly.
Break through that glass ceiling.
Yes.
Bro.
Yeah, man. I'm looking forward to it, man. Because the beats are going well. I'm getting to a point where I'm actually showing people this work. And, like,
the beats are extraordinary now.
Thank you. Thank you.
Way better than before. And even before, you were good. But now, getting better.
Makes my goal, 5 a week.
Yeah.
You just sit there, and it's like, it's got to happen. So, you know, I've seen people post online. You know, I don't know if you're like me. Sometimes I go out there like, how is this creativity thing going to go? Like, where can I get some tips? And like, you always see people posting like, oh, I've got beat block. I've got this. I can't do this. And it's like, how does that happen to you? Mm-hmm. Well, I just don't feel like doing it. And then I don't. It's like, I do it even when I don't feel like doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm getting some results is because I feel like just sitting on the couch eating potato chips, but like, I'm going to do my work.
Sometimes I get writer's block. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I go to use, I got an MPC One now. Young Z bought it for me. You know what I'm saying?
Word.
And he was like, yo, Pace, back to them beats, bro. And you know how to do them. Hey, I bought you this. Boom. Gave me an MPC One. But now when sometimes I sit down and I look at it, I'd be like, now, where do we start this time? Because I jumped right back into it. So I made like 50 beats, but then like the 51st beat, I just looked at it like, where do we go this time? Is everyone gonna be hip hop? Am I gonna try to do a pop joint? Am I gonna try to do an R&B joint? What do we do this time?
Yeah.
So and sometimes
there you are. You found your limit, and you're trying to break it,
break through it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I sit down with my pen and my pad, and I look at it, and yo, it's like the pad looking back at me, like, well, get to writing, bro. What you writing for? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know where to start. It's so much stuff going on. I don't know what to talk about. I don't know how to rhyme it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just take your time.
I find you just got to do it, even if it's not going immediately well, because you just got to power through sometimes, you know? But on the MPC One, I got to ask, do you find those pads to be a little small?
No. They're about the same size. Because I also, at the crib, my mother bought me a MPC 2000 XL.
Oh, that's a good piece of equipment.
Yeah, back in the day, maybe back in 2002.
Had the floppy drive on it or no?
Yeah.
Or the zip drive?
Not the zip, but you put the floppy disk in.
Right.
But it ain't a floppy disk. It's a hard disk, but you put it in.
Okay. Psh. Yep.
And that one, mine doesn't take the zip drive. I also...
You can customize them to do that, though.
Me and my brother are dope. My brother makes beats as well. Mm-hmm. He's got a machiner. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's what he uses now and the program on the computer. Mm-hmm. But we also got an old MPC 2000.
Okay.
That's the one that takes the zip drive.
All right.
But the XL doesn't take the zip drive. You just got to use 1,000 discs.
Mm.
And it's tough sometimes.
Yeah, because you got to swap, and then I can't remember the name of the producer that I worked with, but this guy, he was like, I got a snare drum. We were working on something, and he couldn't find the one disc. And he's like, the disc only has the snare I want on this disc. And he's going through a ton of floppies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the, you know, I was working at a Best Buy, you know, doing two shows a month, opening up for bigger, like, this is like the era where I was opening up for like Jurassic 5 and like Method Man and stuff like that, right?
Nice.
And, you know, but I'm working at a Best Buy, and that producer I told you about, Columbion, with the SP-12, I remember him being like, yeah, you can't get floppies anymore, man. This is like a real bummer. And because I had that employee discount, I bought the last floppy disks in Connecticut. I bought something like 200 of them for him, and I'm like, here you go, bro. He's like, word. And it cost me like, because, you know.
You get the employee discount.
Well, back then, I think you paid like 5% above cost. Mm-hmm. So like, it came out to like, I think for $20, I got him like over 200 floppy disks.
He was like, yes. He was in debt to you.
Yeah.
He's indebted, bro.
Yeah. But I love this hip-hop shit. Pace, I love you, man.
I love you,
thank
too,
you
bro.
For doing this with me, bro. No, this is big, because I really got to get back in the habit of just, like, putting these podcasts out, because it can grow, you know?
Name this one Brash and Pace 1 Part 1, because when next time I come up, we'll do it again.
No doubt, and I always end the way we began. This is the Brash Show.
Yeah, dude.
Thank you so much, Pace 1, for coming through. The mighty Pace 1.
No problem. My pleasure.
Yeah, Brash Show. BrashHipHop.com. You want to plug anything?
You could go to my Twitter, that's Pace1, at Pace1. You could go to my Instagram, that's PACE_WON. And you could also hit me on Facebook, Pace1, PACEWON. I love y'all, yo. God bless you.
Word up.